Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Local sport from your local team.
This is Charlton Live.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his own sweet song. Wake up, wake up, you sleepy head. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, love and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
Football for a fiver yesterday, but somehow I still feel shortchanged. Welcome to Charlton Live. Good evening, welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes, and on tonight's show we will be looking back at yesterday's 2-0 defeat here at the Valley, at home to Shrewsbury Town. Joining me in the studio to do just that is our very own resident chef, Mark Newbury. How you doing, Mark?
We're doomed, I tell you.
Are you all right now, other than that? Other than being doomed?
Yeah, apart from that, yeah, fine, thank you. Yeah.
It's one of those questions, are you all right if you don't think about football? Then yeah.
If I don't think about football, I'm happy as Larry.
Yeah, so. But yeah, it's like a weird addiction, isn't it? Very destructive in our lives. And joining the pair of us, the grand old man of Charlton Live. How you doing, Telk?
I've never been good at picking straws. I definitely drew the short straw coming in here. Apart from the lovely food, of course.
Yeah. Well, obviously tonight we're going to be clutching at straws as we try and work out.
Well, I think we should spend the evening. Forget nothing happened yesterday. Honestly, nothing happened at all worth talking about. Whereas the food, whether it will snow, that's always a topic.
I think we
must be able to talk about snow for 2 hours, surely.
Well, we might be able to get away with not watching Charlton this weekend if it snows enough as well, actually.
get your dancing shoes on.
All right, on tonight's show, like I said, we will be looking back at yesterday's 2-0 defeat at home to Shrewsbury. You'll be pleased to know that I accidentally wiped to the highlights, so you won't be able to hear those. But we will hear our exclusive interview with Carl Robinson, who talks about yesterday's game. And then we're going to hear a lot from you guys, I think, tonight. I'll put out a few topics on Twitter throughout the afternoon. But we want to know, of course, what you made of yesterday's game. Why do we always bottle it in front of the Football for a Fiver crowd? Is that just a coincidence because we bottle it most weeks anyway?
Do we though? I know we've done it the last few, but I'd be interested to know what it was like. I mean, how long have we been doing this?
We've been doing this since pretty much the promotion season.
Somebody does. There's bound to be people with stats out there.
From memory, I think a two that we've won.
The last few I know we've lost, haven't we? But I think
we've definitely lost the last four. So if you've got a reason for why that might be, let us know. We're also going to say, I'll put out our record against the top 10 this season, because in particular, if we are going to make the playoffs, then we'll be playing someone within that top 10 most likely. And our record isn't great. We've played 11 games against the current top 10. We've won 2, drawn 3 and lost 6. So I want to know why you think our record against these better teams in League 1 isn't so great, and what we can do to sort of try and turn that around as we carry on this season. Also yesterday, to try and lighten the mood a little bit, there was a big brawl at the end. Josh McGinnis come flying in to get involved with a bit of pushing and shoving, end up getting a yellow card for his troubles. So I want to know what your favourite brawl is involving Charlton players, preferably, but if you have one elsewhere in the world of football, it has to be on the pitch, it doesn't have to be fans. Oh,
there'll only be one that people remember. Yeah. There's one that everybody's going to remember.
Yeah, everyone's going to know that. Was he reviewed to at the Hales Flanagan game?
Oh, I was there.
All right, so we'll definitely talk about that later.
I'm slightly too young for that. I know I look older.
Yeah, all right, I'll take that. Yeah, okay.
And so let us know what your favourite brawls are. And finally, our player in focus this evening, Sully Kaikar, loan from Crystal Palace, has now made 3 starts in a Charlton shirt. So I think, you know, it's time to start judging how well he's done so far. So that's another thing we're going to talk about later on in the show. So all of these things you can get in contact with us about. You can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. You can head over to the Charlton Life forum. There's a thread on there for tonight's show. There's also a separate thread on there for the brawls. There's plenty of brawls on there that we're going to talk about. Yeah, there's a brawl. I started a brawl thread. So if you want to talk about a brawl, get involved with that either on Twitter or on the Charlton Live forum, or like I say, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. So as I said, no highlights because I accidentally wiped the second half. I could have played the first half.
You could play the first 5-6 minutes, yeah, 7 max, and then that's it.
And the penalty save, that's quite fun as well. But other than the first 5 minutes, I think it's fair to say that we got our backsides handed to us.
We got beaten up. We got bullied. We got beaten up. They just dictated from the first 7. I mean, I don't know if it's true, and other people will be able to tell. I spent yesterday. It's depressing, isn't it, when you spend all night looking back over it, sort of where did it go wrong type stuff. But yeah. I did spend a bit of time thinking about what happened, because the first 5 or 6 minutes, it was probably as rocking as I've heard the valley. I mean, obviously, we had 17,500 in there. It was brilliant. We were at them. We had 3 really good chances. Their keeper pulled off a couple of good saves. And I'm thinking, wow, this could be it. You know, this could be a really good game. And then Kaikai got kicked up in the air by Bolton, who then got taken off. But the moment, not quite immediately afterwards, but within 2 minutes of that restart, we didn't restart, I don't think. I think they went out. The penalty came within a couple of minutes after that, didn't it? I think within something like 3 or 4 minutes.
Wasn't much longer, yeah, maybe 5 or 6 minutes, yeah.
And I don't know whether it's because Kaikai got kicked up in the air, he stopped playing. He seemed to go anonymous after that. Quite odd. Whether he took a knock, I don't know. I'm still bemused why he didn't get taken out of it rather than Marshall, personally. But I'm sure there might be reasons for that. But it just seemed like after we didn't get those first 3 chances, and that's happened to us before, but it normally lasts more than seven minutes. But I think the fact that they kicked us, that tackle, he should have been booked. No question. I know he got taken out for injury, but he should have been booked. Kaikai was in the penalty area, or would have been in the penalty area, I should say, and clearing to pick a pass if necessary, even have a shot. So the fact that that guy stopped him doing it, he just wiped him out. It's got to be a yellow card. I don't know what time of the game it is. It's got to be a yellow card. And then there were a couple of other little niggly ones as well, where through the back, I'm trying to think who it was who went through the back, who kept going through the back of our players, and didn't get pulled up once. I'm trying to think who it was. It was their midfield player. I'm trying to think who it was.
Nolan? John Nolan?
No, it wasn't Nolan. He was. He had a bit more about him, Nolan, I think. I think it might have been Godfrey. I'm trying to remember who it was, but forgive me, I can't. But he never got pulled once. Rodman was always quite a little niggly little player as well. And, you know, the referee just kept letting them get away with it for the first quarter of an hour. And I think once they got that penalty, all right, they missed it. And you're thinking then, when they missed it, this is our chance. You know, we've got to be up for this now. I mean, it was how we missed that second header, I'll never know, by the way. But, you know, good enough saving that Amos stayed big, so got his legs to it, which is what a keeper's supposed to do, I suppose. But you'd think after that, that'd lift us and maybe deflate them a bit, but it almost seemed to have the opposite effect. They just kept coming at us, wouldn't let us settle. By all accounts, we just forgot the game plan that was in place in the first place. What it was, I'm not entirely sure. And I think after a quarter of an hour, you can almost see it. I think it was a fairly even first half. Without really, we couldn't get back into the game. I don't think it was the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, it's not been too many times this season, Mark, that we've seen a team come to the Valley and do that to us and just completely outplay us. I think other than the Wigan performance, I mean, that's the only time I've seen us completely outplayed at home this season that I can remember.
Yeah, I think we probably made Shrewsbury look better than we actually were. I mean, we deserved everything we didn't get yesterday, really. But I think first 5 minutes of ecstasy, then 85 minutes of just despondency and confusion. And it, you know, we struggled. I think they pushed us very high up. They pushed the midfield up. They pushed the back four up, and we couldn't get out of our own half. And it seemed to be what worked so well for us at Milton Keynes. You know, the triangle. You know, it just didn't work. And I've got a feeling that Aribo didn't really have anyone to mark, and he looked a little lost sometimes, just being behind Josh and thinking he didn't know where to go. And I think if that doesn't work, I mean, the manager's got to see. He wasn't really doing much in the first half and change it.
I'm going to ask a question. I don't know if you found it strange. When we were playing well, the first 5 or 7 minutes, what we found their weakness was turning round. So they were pressing us so high.
Yeah.
Little chip balls over the top. I mean, we had a couple of chances there where we didn't let them settle in. We let them have the ball in defence and let them push up to us at virtually on the halfway line. Take the ball off them and then chip the ball over the top, and we turned them to quite a few times in that first 5 or 7 minutes. I'm thinking that's a good game plan. You know, they're clearly leaving a decent amount of space behind it. Then we just stop doing it.
Yeah,
but the thing that I didn't understand is if we're going to play that way, you've got to have more than Josh McGuinness up front.
Mm.
So, I mean, you've got to be able to support that more. If you're just putting balls behind them and into space, the gap between Josh McGuinness and anybody else is too much. You can't do it with that.
Because Carl did mention, actually, there's about trying to play over their press. So that's exactly what we're talking about, chipping it over.
Can't do that with one up front, long, can you?
Well, I mean, he obviously felt that you could. And it seems to be working in the first 5 minutes. But it's hard to put your finger on why it changed so dramatically after that first 5 minutes as well. Because, I mean, I've never seen us so dominant at the start, but then completely lose it after that.
Well, the first chance which fell to Jake, you're thinking, hit it first time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's good at passing the ball into the net, and you don't know what he saw or why he stuttered. And so they cleared it. And then the next one, you know, Josh has had a good head of their goalies make a good save, and Joe's followed it up from the other side. And again, sort of like a good save. And like you say, then after that 5 minutes, the tackle, penalty. And
you do wonder, actually. I mean, I still think they bullied us, they kicked us up in the air, and we didn't get any protection through that. But when you consider the goal they scored, the first one, the second one was a gimme. You know, again, we just didn't follow men. But that first one was out of nowhere. You know, you didn't expect Rodman to pick that up. I mean, I think it was how many times did Cashy give the ball away yesterday, by the way? And I'm pretty sure it was his fault that he lost the ball in that area down our right hand side. And that Rodman just picked it up and spanked it. I mean, nobody was expecting that, to be honest. And
so
it was a great strike, but I mean how many times would he do that? So if that hadn't have gone in, would it have ended up a stalemate? I'm not sure. Maybe. I mean, are we over critical because, you know, once that strike went in, maybe everybody lost it?
Yeah, I mean, because you expect a much better reaction from us as well, but the reaction never came. And in fairness, the reaction to how the game turned after the first 10 minutes never came. We never reacted to the way that they started to outplay us.
No,
we never saw anything in that. No. Even after that first 10 minutes, we never saw anything that made me think. At half time, I remember saying, you know, Shrewsbury had been much the better side, and I think no one would have seen any different to that.
No, I mean, to go in at half time 0-0, I mean, thanks to the penalty save, I think was quite amazing, really. But when it came out, you're thinking, right, second half, maybe he's organised and better, maybe he's got them to do something. And second half, you're thinking, only one team came out in that second half, and it wasn't us.
Is that about character? I don't know. I mean, we haven't got, really, when you think about it. We got some good players, don't get me wrong. We got some, you know, and I'd question anybody to say, if you looked at our players, you'd put them in. I think most other teams would have most of our players. I'm not talking about the lone players, by the way, Gakko and Jairo, by the way. But what we haven't got is that steel. You know, that horrible player you want in midfield. We had Danny Ollins back in the day, you know, when we were in this league and lost it. We haven't got that style of player, I don't think.
Well, you'd think you'd expect Cashy to be there. He's a combative midfielder at times. He gives the ball away a bit, we saw yesterday, but he doesn't mind a challenge. Forster-Kaski likes to get back as well, but they certainly didn't seem to be doing much of it yesterday. They were bullied in that central midfield.
Cashy tends to spend his time patrolling in front of our back four. And sort of therefore, I mean, that's not an exclusive statement, by the way, he does get around, but I thought Danny Ollins was much more forward thinking, that's the wrong phrase, but he tackled further up the pitch than I think Cashy does.
What did you make of the team news before the start of the game? So obviously we saw Jason Pearce coming back in his first start since mid-December in place of Patrick Bauer. Now, you know, I'm a big fan of Jason, but I think it very much felt like his first start since mid-December yesterday.
Indeed, yeah. He looked fresh and he didn't look to his normal standard. I can understand, obviously, with Paddy being out last week, getting a hit to the backside, why he wasn't going to come back in. But, you know, we've seen other players who've been out injured come straight back into the team. You know, maybe it would have been better to start with Bauer. But I don't think the end result would have been any different. But I think sometimes Bauer's got a touch more about dribbling the ball forward and then passing it. I think Pearce, he's looking for a pass, look for sideways. He's not going to take it to the halfway line. He didn't look to his normal standard yesterday, Pearce. I mean, there's not one of them who can hold their hands up and
I'd
say,
agree with that. I think if Jason Pearce was going to pick a game to come back in, he wouldn't have picked that one. Because, you know, Morris, I think it was, wasn't it? Their centre forward. Good player. Really good hold up player. Big, physical, strong. And he gave Jason Pearce a tough game. I think he would have eaten Bauer alive, personally. So I think, I agree with you, Mark, about the dribbling out of defence. Bauer likes to do that. It would have been suicidal if we tried that yesterday. You know, it was bad enough as it was. If we'd have tried to dribble out of defence anymore, that would have probably been picked off 4 or 5. I think Jason Pearce looked nervous because I think he knew he was up against a player that's going to give him hard time. It was his first game back for a while. Yeah, it was a baptism of fire for him, but I still would have put him in first as opposed to Paddy. And I like Paddy, don't get me wrong, but I think we'd have been eaten alive yesterday at back four if he'd have been playing.
The other change, of course, was Marshall coming back in with Ben Reeves returning to the bench. Now, I had a couple of people tweeting me during the game that they felt that Reeves should have kept his place yesterday. I mean, did you think that?
I can see why you'd say that. I think Marshall gives us a bit more defensively. Whether that's a good thing or not at home, I'd tend to agree. I'm sort of in the camp where, I mean, I like Ben Reeves. I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's really shown us that yet. Not totally, for whatever reason. And I think... I think Mark Marshall's actually played quite well in the last few weeks. I didn't think he should have been brought off yesterday either, actually.
So that start then, that lightning start, I mean, what was it that we were doing right in that opening spell? Because that really did, for that first 5 minutes, you're suddenly thinking, right, here we go, this is big crowds, cold day, but sun's shining, you know, we're creating these chances. We could have easily been 2-0 up within the first 3 minutes. I mean, what was going so well in the opening stages?
I just think we caught them cold, like other teams have caught us cold from the first 5 minutes. You know, crisp passing, movement. Like I say, we managed to get behind their full-backs, get the crosses over quick, and it was just a faster reaction. And, you know, I think after those first 5 minutes we hadn't scored, whether something went through and went, oh, it's not going to be our day, you know, and head'll drop. It goes on from there.
I'm not sure anything, any one thing happened. I still believe that Kaikai stopped playing after he got kicked up and taken out on the edge of that penalty area. I think the first 10 minutes, I think I said it before, we chip balls over the top, making them turn, putting them on the back foot facing their own goal. I thought that's why we were superior in the first, maybe even up to 10 minutes. But as soon as that penalty went in, as soon as they got the penalty, I should say. Which I said it must have been around the quarter hour mark or just before. I think once that penalty was given away, all right, they didn't score it, but something changed. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know. Maybe it was because they got through us easy, and then suddenly doubt creeps into the players' minds. You know, oh, hold on, that thing we were doing in the first 7 minutes isn't working now. Let's go back to the way we normally play, sideways football, trying to work it round them, and that absolutely didn't work.
The penalty came on 17 minutes now. Now, I'm going to have to take everyone else's word for it, because I was actually on air at the time, so I wasn't looking at the pitch. But apparently, it sounds like there was some sort of handball in the build-up. But as play continued, having watched the replay, it did look like a bit of a stone wall after Cons has hauled Nolan down.
I think it was a penalty, actually. I mean, I couldn't see the handball in as much as that the player who supposedly handballed, which I think actually might have been Nolan. His back was to me, and I think it was Chris Solly was trying to play it out. It was a ridiculous ball to try and play, by the way. And it caught Nolan. Whether it caught me in the arm, I have no idea. Chris Solly seemed fairly convinced. But Sargent and the referee ignored it. Ball into the box. I think it was Nolan again. No, just into the box. And Conza just slipped over. And as soon as Conza starts slipping, Nona's going to play for it. You just know he is. He's, yeah. And I think he was their best player all game, actually.
Yeah, certainly one of them who seemed to run the game. They're quite a bit of, especially down their right-hand side, I felt that a couple of players down there seem to get involved quite a lot. Now, it's very rare we actually see a penalty saved by a Charlton goalkeeper, it feels like. But we got that luck yesterday, and then I'm not going to say it was the best penalty ever. It was a decent save. Amos did what he had to do, and then the defence did... Again, they got into the place to try and put him off with the rebound. And as you said earlier, to how we missed that header that came with the crossbar.
I think it might have been Forster Kesky who was the man back there putting him off. So you've got to give him credit for that.
Mm.
But yeah, he should have scored that. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was a good penalty. It was down the middle. Mm. And Amos just kept his legs there.
Yeah.
And looked it up in the air.
Yeah, but just the way when you get sort of like a pick-me-up like that, like a penalty save, you do then expect that will be the fillip to lift the crowd and then to lift the team again.
That's it, but you know, leaders on the pitch. We've said before, you know, you had Piercy back, and Solly's supposed to be the captain. You know, there was nothing there, and it did honestly feel just flat. And you know, Kakai just doesn't. I know he got clobbered, but he doesn't like to defend, and so he's not helping back at all. And so they were going down that side and seemed to be overloading Jay sometimes, and they've obviously looked, and we've conceded a few crosses from that side recently, so they've obviously seen that as a weakness of us and thinking they're not going to get the help. And I don't know what it is with Kakai, whether he thinks he's too good for us, or you're thinking he played for Shrewsbury last year, didn't he, so you know, he could have something to prove against them, but he just didn't look up for it. And you know, I'd have whipped him off at half time.
Kai is our player in focus. If you want to have your say on his performances so far, we've had some mixed reviews so far. If you want to have your say on that, email studio@charltonlive.co.uk, tweet us at Charlton Live. We've got plenty of correspondence that's come flying in. Now, after that penalty save, in fairness, I think Shrewsbury started to control possession, but in terms of actual chances, like the first half seemed to peter out after the last sort of, you know, the first 20 minutes, other than that volley that I think was Morris had on the far post that he put off target. They were controlling play, but not too much in terms of chances.
No. Yeah. And that's why I was saying about, I think it might have ended up like a fairly stale 0-0 had that wonder goal not come in. Because I couldn't see them. I didn't see that they were creating a lot. They were stopping us playing. They were balls up to Morris, hoping he'd hold it up and then create something from there. But I thought we'd coped with that up to a point. Without actually then looking like we were going to do anything, of course. But then you get that strike and right into the top corner.
Well, I think Shrewsbury certainly came out the more determined, it seemed, at the start of the second half. And they had a low cross that went into the area that sort of deflected. And in the end, Amos was able to grasp it at the second attempt. And then we had sort of a warning shot fired by Sean Wally over on the far side to where we are in the West Stand. A left-footed curler that sort of seemed to go almost across the face of goal and just out of the far side. But it was only a few minutes after that when Rodman got his goal. I mean, it was a superb goal. I mean, Amos got a hand onto it, do you think?
He did. He got fingers to it and he was disappointed. But when you see it back, Cashy's missed a tackle and he's gone through him. And then Solly, instead of showing him outside, has let him come in. And once he's come inside and he's curled it, and I say Amos has literally got his fingertips to him. He thinks he's pushed it round. And when he sees it behind him in the net, his reaction... You know, you could see how disappointed he was. Mm. You know, I think he thinks it was a savable shot.
Mm. The trouble with that is, though, if you're Chris Solly, is that you're playing a guy on who should be left-footed. I think he is, Rodman. But obviously two-footed now. so you're naturally trying to keep him off his favoured foot, assuming he is left-footed. Now, if he's right-footed, then you're absolutely right. Mm. He's got to keep him away from that right foot and see him out. But as a right back against a left foot, a left winger, you normally want to show him inside because that's not normally his better foot, so he can't do that sort of thing. Mm. Clearly, that was wrong.
Well, Red and White CAFC has just tweeted in saying Solly was backing off for the first goal and he invited the shot. I mean, did you feel that?
If you remember, I agree with that. But a lot of the time, if you I always remember Alan Kirby always used to say it as well. If you restrict the opposition to 25-yard shots, hopeful punts, I think you used to call them, then you're doing your job, because how many of them will actually go in? This one did, spanked in the top corner, but 9 times out of 10 they end up the back of the covered end or going out for a throw in, or do you know what I mean? So
but it's virtually identical to the Scunthorpe away, their first goal.
No, that's a good point.
and almost exactly the same position right on the corner of that area, and these guys come in, bump, top corner.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And it's a carbon copy. And when you concede carbon copy goals, that's when you've got to look at, right, what are we doing wrong?
But that should be, I agree with you, by the way, but is that, I don't think that's Chris Solly's job. I mean, Chris Solly's job is to usher them inside, and then it's your midfield who take over.
But obviously Cash had just gone through and was still true. On his backside, so no point. One else has come across.
That's
so
it's the point.
So Mark Marshall was the one who made way on 57 minutes now for Fosse, and obviously we know Fosse is still coming back from his injury, which is why he wasn't starting. Now, Tell, you said you felt that you were surprised that Marshall was the one to make way in this.
Yeah,
game,
I was a bit. I mean, I know we're then going for the game, I guess, but I thought after Kai Kai got kicked up in the air, apart from a couple of little touches here and there, generally didn't offer much after that. As I say, whether it was an injury or whether it's mental, I don't know, but I'd have taken Kaka off, I've got to be honest.
I'd have taken him off at half time. I think he'd lost interest in the game. Yeah. I mean, we all pretty much had, but he was the one who was playing. So, yeah.
and then I think we saw a set piece routine that sort of summed our day up yesterday, where Kai Kai played it in free kick in a very crossable position. Everyone's forward for it, and Kai Kai played it short into Forster Kasky. And the flick, I mean, Jake's just put too much on it, and Kai Kai can't make it, and it's rolled straight out for a goal kick. And that sort of summed, for me yesterday, summed up the lack of ideas we
were
going
almost
forward.
Expecting a tenor to go wah, 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 because it was that time.
Yeah.
You just, your chin hits the floor, and you think, yep, yeah. That's the day.
Yeah, worth every penny of that £5 that was. And then, and it weren't much longer after that that second goal's gone in. And it's funny because we conceded to Kieran Agard's header from a corner last week against Milton Keynes.
It's definitely a weakness for us.
Cole came out and said after, it's funny that, because we don't actually concede too many from set pieces, but done it again now.
I think we are susceptible to that a lot, I think. And it might not be from set pieces, but not following runners into the box, especially into the 6-yard. There's no excuse for that. You know, somebody's got to take responsibility. I don't know whose marker he was. But I think it might have been Kai Kai's again. But you can't have players running past you into the box, especially somebody like Beckles, who's a physical unit anyway. Mm. He's always going to get his head on it.
Yeah, he looks quite a handy player, Beckles. Red and White CFC added on the Solly stuff, said at Bury at home, the same position, same kind of goal conceded from Solly backing off. But I guess, as you say, Taylor, sometimes when you're that far out, you're sort of willing him to have the short ways, but we've been punished for it.
You know, as I say, I mean, look, let's be honest. Chris Solly is not as quick as he was 5-10 years ago. So he's got to diving in and then trying to catch him up. If they skip past him, is not something he's going to be able to do anymore. I still think he's one of our... he's probably still the best right-back we've got as well, by the way. But and I still think he's worth his place. But the backing off and showing him inside is something that defenders normally do, you know, and then you're supposed to be helped out by your midfield alongside you. And I think when Mark Marshall on the pitch, generally that doesn't happen, but he was caught out. I don't know if he was following the runner, probably following the their left back, Beckles. He's probably, I'm trying to remember the image in my head of, because Mark Marshall normally doubles up on anybody down that.
He wasn't that far
right side.
No, he was behind him still.
Yeah,
he was so. Because I think they'd expected Cashy to get the ball because the way Cashy slid in, because it's gone underneath him. And by the time he's got the ball and gone inside, Marshall's about, I think it's about 6-7 yards behind him. Yeah. So,
I mean, I get maybe Chris Solly, if he doesn't back off and he tries to take the tackle and this guy skips around him, then he's being criticised as well. But a combination perhaps of all three.
So after that second goal's gone in, Carl tries pretty much his last throw of the dice, and De Silva coming off and a Jose coming on in a move that we sort of reshuffled the pack then, and then some people, I think, did Aribo sort of end up at,
well, Aribo went to left back but yeah. he looked lost there. He
made a couple of tackles earlier on that you think
he managed to recover back, but yeah. they knew there was a gap there because he was just being drawn in, and luckily he's got long old legs and he could get his toe on it. I mean, De Silva went off, I presume, because he was injured. Not really for it. It was
seen in a boot.
We can work out who was going to go across there. We thought, well, possibly Solly will go to the right, or we go to a three at the back.
I thought three at the back when I first saw it.
But, you know, you're losing 2-0, going to three, and they were going at us. You know, I don't think it would have made much odds to it. But, you know, a Jose, when it came on, I actually didn't think did too badly. You know, he got back into the penalty area. You know, it was a bit of a sticky moment where we fell over on the ball. But, you know, he's getting back and he's tracking back. And I'm thinking, that's what you want to see. It looks like he's put a bit of timber on. I know I can't speak. You know, I can't talk about that. But, you know, I'm thinking, I like Jose. And I so want him to sort of, like, try and turn it round and do well. So, and I, you know, sticking Zyro on for, I mean, the ball didn't go out, so Zyro was stood there for about 6 minutes.
Yeah, got him ready.
Just hopping around. Out, yeah. So he didn't really get as much time as he's had as well.
Yeah, because then we did have that horrible little spell, actually, where Shrewsbury had two or three good chances in you know, the free kick that come back to Nolan that we was off target with. The one that fell to Wally about 6 yards out, and like a Wally, he volleyed it wide. And then, as you mentioned, the ball into the area where Charlton made an absolute meal of clearing it, including Nicky Ojoze standing on it and pretty much falling over. But we survived that horrible little spell. The last 5 minutes, other than the bundle, I watched it back. I mean, Cashy went through the back of the player. It was a yellow card.
All day long,
yellow card challenge.
Yeah.
A few of their players got involved, and then McGuinness ran the length of the pitch, fastest we've seen him move for a little while.
Having said that, he wasn't the only one. Their keeper ran from a lot further back than McGuinness to get involved.
The only thing I will say is, it seemed like, other than the Shrewsbury players were sort of shouting at Cashy, but it was fairly calm until McGuinness came in and piled through him, and then started a bit of a set too. And he was rightly put, but you're right to say there was others who came in
Cashy, their keeper Rodman, who was giving it large, could have been as well. It's the fact that he only booked McGuinness is a nonsense for me. You know, because if fair, I can understand you booking McGuinness, don't get me wrong, because you come from that far, you're aggravating the incident, you should be, yeah, fine. Their keeper come from miles away, and I could see his face from
Carl grabbed one of their players.
Carl was stopping Rodman getting involved, you know, because Rodman was going to take out McGuinness.
But it's funny, if you see Ben turn round, and when it all kicks off, and just watch Ben just look at all, and just turn round, just shake his head and have a drink, and go, I'm not getting involved in that, because we're like, look, their keeper's getting in, you know, pile in, Ben.
So surely, if McGuinness is booked, and I understand he's been booked, at least their keeper should have been, at least. Yeah. But, you know,
I think fair punishment would have been to call the game off and overturn the result. That's the
absolutely,
yeah. Final whistle, booze, probably as expected after a disappointed performance yesterday. Now, obviously, we need to put this in context. So, I think that's our second defeat in 8 games now. If you take the run longer, I think we've only won 5 out of our last 18. So, you know, short-termism, the form isn't awful. If you take it to the last 20 games or so, obviously we had quite a big, difficult run in there. We're now outside the playoffs again, just outside, 2 games in hand. You know, we need to put this result into some sort of context. You know, as disappointing as the performance and frustrating as it was yesterday, luckily, because there's other teams having horrible runs as well, we're still in the playoff race. But we desperately need to bounce back and improve.
We do, yeah. But, I mean, in that run, we've only won 1 of 6, haven't we, in the last 6. So we have got to start putting wins together, no question about it, and otherwise even the playoff dream is going to disappear. Wimbledon, the trouble with Wimbledon, we should be knocking out away, no problem at all. We turn up, we beat them, we go away.
We know that's
but
not going to be.
That's not going to happen because it's Wimbledon and the history and everything. It's their cup final, you know it, at their place, and that's going to be a really tough game. They're going to try and beat us up as well. We've got to be strong characters next week, and anything like yesterday's showing, and we won't win that one either.
Yeah. Well, actually, the last 6. 1-2, drawn 2, lost 2, scored 9, conceded 9, got 8 points.
Okay, so we've got.
So that's a pretty level.
Sort of middling form, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a pretty, you know, it's equal all the way along.
It's funny. There's a point, before yesterday, our own fault, if the games had finished on 80 minutes, we would have won 6 in a row.
Well, is that the only positive to come out of yesterday, that we didn't concede a goal after the 90th minute?
Yeah, I said that, because Shrewsbury have got a habit. They scored 20-something percent of their goals in the last 10 minutes again. So we stopped that. We've gotten over the last-minute hoodoo again, 2 weeks in a row. Unfortunately, the previous 80 minutes we conceded twice in, so there you go. Right, Carl Robinson weren't saying much yesterday, was he, Till?
No, it was a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a few. All of us do interviews with Carl after the game, so my interview with Carl was 3 minutes, the shortest one I've ever done. His press conference was about 5 minutes.
I couldn't believe how quickly he came in here.
And he came in here, and he was in here for 3 minutes. This is what Carl had to say exclusively for Charlton Live after yesterday's game. Don't forget, though, we want you to react to this. You can email studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. Head over to the Charlton Live forum and stick a message on there on the thread for tonight's show. This is what Carl Robinson had to say after yesterday's defeat.
Carl, 2-0 defeat. First couple of minutes, the crowd and everybody watching thinking this could be a really good game for us. And then it just petered out a little bit, because, I guess because of Shrewsbury's physicality, amongst other things.
Yeah, and they didn't get one player booked.
Just discussing it.
Baffling, really. But listen, it is what it is. I think you can't use the referee today as an excuse. We were by far the worst team.
Do you put that down purely to the physical approach of Shrewsbury? They just
we played into their hands. Everything we said we were going to do, we didn't do.
And that's, I mean, is that because of the nature of the game and the rule book or the whatever goes out the window when you're faced with the first 5 minutes we don't score?
People come on and say, oh yeah, we didn't do this, we didn't do that. We tried to play more of an aggressive game, play a little bit more direct today, but we didn't even do that. We were sort of caught in the middle of playing long balls and not getting close enough to win seconds and playing too many backwards and sideways passes. It's clearly obvious why we didn't win the game. We didn't perform to the best of our ability. We didn't perform well, they performed well. That's as honest as a reflection of the game as I can give you.
Do you think it might have been different at one of those early chances?
Possibly, but we can't use that as an excuse to say, oh yeah, we would have won or we would have got more out of the game. But yeah, I think what helped them after 8-9 minutes when their right back went off, they killed the game very well. We sort of struggled then. I remember Jacko saying that that's going to help them actually during that moment. But listen, I can't come to you with any excuses here today. We were by far away the worst team.
The level they played at Shrewsbury, and they've done that quite a bit this season. They're one of the best performing sides, if not the best performing away sides in the division, and you can probably see why. Is that the sort of level we need to be at to be in that?
No, I think we know what the levels are. We're not naive and stupid. We certainly know what the levels are to be in there. But when you've got a team that is recruited just purely and simply in that way, you can't play the same type of game as them. You've got to play beyond that press. And we didn't today. We played into it. Play people rolling inside. I mean, even the penalty. Marshy coming inside. Why not give us the width? Our skill is our 1v1 duels. We're the best wingers in the league, I think, on the day. So why are they coming inside and condensing the space where Shrewsbury are powerful? We didn't work on that. You'd be shocked if you seen what we worked on Thursday and Friday. Because I didn't see many of it coming out today, and the players know that. They've been told in no uncertain terms. I think they're quite honest about their own assessment, their own performance. We certainly let ourselves down.
Is it now just a case then of consigning that to the past and
yeah, listen, I always said this time of year, you've got to sort of put one thing to bed and move forward the next one very quickly. There's a lot of games still to play, a lot of moments that will be judged upon. We've been beat fair and square, and we've got to put that off to one side and use that as a learning curve for the next few games that we're going to play in.
I guess on the plus side, you know, the teams that have come here, probably Shrewsbury, maybe Wigan as well, are the only two that have really done that to us.
Yeah, but still not nice to be sat here on the end of that. I don't think they're better than Shrewsbury. I think we've been poor today, and we've played into their hands.
Well, we go again on Saturday. Another physical approach, really, with over at Wimbledon. Do you approach it in the same manner as today's game in that respect?
Yeah, listen. Do they listen to what we do, and we drop our own egos and we play as a team? Yeah, 100%.
Jada Silva, and now forced to Kasky, looking to whip the ball in, and he does, and it's a really dangerous ball all the way across, and
get in there. Come on,
and it's super
come
Josh on. McGuinness, who has put Charlton 2 goals in front. They've been looking for that second goal, they haven't really had many chances, apart from the Aribo strike early in the second half, but Charlton have doubled their lead.
We can hear from that. I've played that so quietly, but yesterday's mascots were quite simply the best we've ever had in
best
the studio.
Best and loudest, no question.
Yeah,
about it.
And they took it straight away, and that was the best shout we've had. Carl Robinson there, tell.
Yeah, it was tough, wasn't it?
Yeah,
pretty. I mean, you were in here, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and they were sort of very simple answers, and he just stopped.
It's not often you find him
not at all.
Even after the Bradford game, which was a very disappointing second half, he was really, remember I played it on the show, he was really riled up. He ended up swearing and stuff. But yesterday he just was not in the mood to talk.
No, I've got to take responsibility for that, because, you know, it's partly my fault that I didn't try and get more out of him. But normally with Carl, you just set him off with a couple of questions and he'll answer the questions even before you ask him. You know, he's away and gone, and you just sit back and watch it happen. But yesterday, he clearly was angry, upset, I don't know, call it what you will, but didn't particularly want to answer any questions at all.
It talked about the game plan not being utilised how it should have been. He said, everything that we were going to do, we didn't do. So do you think there was some frustration from him there? He felt that what he'd asked the players to do didn't happen?
Possibly, but I think that might be a little bit too simplistic. I think Mark said it earlier on. If that is the case, and it changes so early on, because we're talking about after 15 minutes, by the sounds of it, everything changed after the penalty, then you should have enough time to be able to sort that out, or at least tell the players, right, why have you stopped doing that? Start doing that again. But I think it's a bit more than that. I think, as I say, that explanation is probably a little bit too simplistic. I think want of a better word, I think we might have bottled it yesterday, and we just weren't physically strong enough against the team that beat us up.
But we didn't just stop in the second half, we stopped in the first half. You know, and you think a good 25 minutes plus. Yeah. So why, in the half time, did he not throw a cup, make a sub, get the subs out, warming up straight away, say, right, you stay out here and warm up, and give that intent? I mean, their subs warmed up, ours didn't. And you think to yourself, that if I'm a player and I don't see anyone warming up, I'm thinking, well, I'm pretty much safe. I'm not going to get you.
It was chuffing cold, though.
Yeah.
So
I just wonder if when I started my petition a couple of weeks ago to have games end after 85 minutes, maybe they thought there was a decimal point in there and they just stopped playing 8. After 8.5 minutes. Freddie reacting to that interview said it doesn't sound like he really has answers after listening to that. Didn't make clear specifically where we went wrong or where we should improve. And James Moynard said Robbo moans they didn't do what they worked on Thursday and Friday. What's he doing at the side to change that? He should be bellowing in their ears to sort it out. I mean,
well, maybe you've got to start thinking he might have known from very early on that he didn't have anything either on the bench or out on the pitch that would change it. Maybe he's thinking, well, actually, we're being beaten up here and I've got nothing
But he'd look behind him and he'd see.
I don't agree with that, by the way.
He'd see Fosu on the bench. Surely you'd expect him to come on and make a difference.
I don't think he wanted to put Fosu on, though, because when you consider, I don't think he was due to be even on the bench yesterday. So, because they did, he said you don't want to rush him and then him and be out for 4 or 5 weeks. I actually believe he didn't want to play him at all, but didn't have any choice. Because we were getting spanked. So it was more desperation than anything else. I was quite surprised to see him come on.
And then behind him also, we had a Jose who we saw got sort of 20 minutes and Zairo got 2 minutes again. Now obviously questions are going to now be asked, but what's going on with Zairo, because he's been here for a month now and he's played 5 minutes here and there.
Yeah, he was lauded, wasn't he? What can you say, because we haven't seen him enough. We haven't seen him enough to form an opinion of how good or bad he is. And that's disappointing, obviously. Obviously, they see him in training and maybe don't think that he can offer any different. But we don't know that.
Right, let's have a look at the correspondence that started coming in earlier on in the afternoon. Dwayne said, yesterday's match to look back on and no new owner yet. This show should be an absolute blasting. It can be quite miserable sometimes coming in on a Sunday evening. Dwayne, you're quite right. Now, London in at Geezer, he's not a fan of Robbo, certainly not. And he said he's just seen an interesting stat. I haven't had time to double check this, but it sounds about right. But I think there's some things you need to take into consideration. So just an interesting stat, the Robinson's win percentage in the lowest of any Charlton manager in the third tier for 90 years, barring Russell Slade. Now, to put that into context, we haven't been in the third tier that often over 90 years. Normally when we are, we're probably near the top. Already better, and he's also better than Russell Slade. So, I mean, to put that into context, it's not like he's our worst manager for 90 years, and we are in the top 10. You can easily forget that, but people are going to get frustrated that with the squad, we're not higher. We're not challenging for the top two, I guess.
Do you know, I think, and I agree with that, by the way, and I understand Mike London in it. Mike is not a fan. I get that as well. Sometimes I share his opinion 100%. But the thing with our squad is I think if you look at it, and I've said many times, even from the beginning of the season, if we play well, there shouldn't be a team that lives with us. Maybe Wigan aside, but there shouldn't be too many teams that can live with us when we're playing well. The problem with that is then you've got teams who are clever, you've got managers who are clever, and you've got teams that can stop you doing that. And that's what teams are doing to us. They're stopping us doing what we're good at. And what we haven't got is the ability to mix it up a little bit. We've got a great squad, we've got some fantastic players, and I think I mentioned it earlier, what we haven't got is scruffy, dirty players. Players who can get stuck in, players who you're not going to mess with, players that stop them playing as well, you know, and can handle it. Put it this way, you just get the feeling if Danny Ollins was in the centre of that brawl towards, and I've mentioned him twice, and I'm, you know, he's not my relation or anything. You get the feeling that brawl might not have happened because he'd have had somebody around the throat by then. You know what I mean. And when teams know they can just physically outmuscle you and just get the better of you and dominate you, then they're going to do it.
Well, it's interesting you say that about, you know, the physical side of the game now, because I'm trying to remember exactly what fixture it was, but there was a game earlier on in this season where we interviewed Solly after. I can't remember which one it is. I think it was a home game, and he was saying, "Look, we've shown today that we can do both sides of the game." It might have been maybe Rotherham.
I think Wigan away shows we can.
Yeah.
If you think about Wigan away when we battled that 0-0 and we competed for every single second of that game. It was a superb defensive performance. So we know we can. The problem is, you get the feelings when we all concentrate on doing that, we can't do the other bit and score goals up the other end. Yeah, I think when you're relying on everybody to click in to do that, you need then everybody to perform. And if one or two don't, then it doesn't work.
Right, F. James tweeted in, good evening, chaps. I wasn't able to be at the game, but what I hear is we were a shambles. Explain why Carl made a very late sub as he lost the plot. Surely he understands the change in formation was obvious, or is he too loyal to his favourite? Surely he knows you aren't going to be gaining anything by being over loyal. I said last week, give Josh a rest and a Jose a chance. You shot me down then. Are you still as blind as Carl Robinson is? Come on, chaps, get real or stop being loyal to yourselves. I know it's not only the front line to blame. Yes, it's the whole team, but you need to start making changes now. I still, however, believe we will gain promotion, but now is the time to reorganise. Sorry if you find me forthright, but I speak what I see. Now, I stand by I saw no reason to drop Josh McGuinness after he scored 3 and 4 games and bring on a Jose to play up top, because I don't think he can play up top on his own. So I stand by that. But he's talking about a change in formation. It's something we've heard a million times, you know, throughout this season now. There's still people asking for it, still people saying, why don't we do it? Why weren't we playing with 2 up top, especially if we're going to be going long to Josh McGuinness on his own yesterday?
Well, he clearly didn't hear me about 10 minutes ago then, because that's exactly what I said. I think if we're going to play the game that it was muted that we had to play yesterday, we had to play 2 up top, you know, because Josh McGuinness on his own isn't going to work with that little chip ball over the top turning their defence when they've got 3 defenders against 1. Even if he does get past them, he's got too many people to take on. So I agree 100% that we don't have the personnel, I'm not sure, but I actually think we do, to be able to change the formation about. I think we should have started with 2 up top yesterday. With the formation in mind to combat Shrewsbury and the way they play, I think it can have only worked with 2 up top, personally.
Right, Bob Liscombe says, thoughts for Saturday. Bauer must partner Konza Fosu to replace Kakai. To spend the day with the missus instead of going to a second visit at King's Meadow. He's saying that he should thinks Bauer and Konza should be the partnership. I mean, you can't really. I know Piercy had a bad game, but surely, I mean, there's where you're slightly worried about perhaps a lack of experience there in terms of experience. Had Piercy, for me, if he's on his game, would be the better one there.
Well, I'd go with Pearson Bauer, put Konza on the right back. I think that would. It depends if De Silva's not going to be fit, and whether Robbo wants to put Page straight back in. I know he's played a couple of games for the under-23s, but you know, we've seen Solly go to the left and play there, and put Konza on a right back. So, you know, that's an option.
Can I throw something out of left field, if you'll pardon the pun?
Go on.
Throw away. Three centre-halves. So I have Konza, Bauer and Pearce as the three centre-halves. And put Chris Solly as the extra midfield player. We know he can tackle. We know he can put a shift in. He might not be as quick as he used to be, so therefore maybe the right side of midfield or even sort of defensive midfield player is the place where he can play. Because then you've got three. Because they're a tall unit. Don't forget AFC Wimbledon. They're going to do very similar to what Shrewsbury did. Maybe not as well, clearly, but they're going to be lumping balls up and trying to wing it. Because they've got a huge centre forward from memory. I don't remember who he is, yeah.
Well, they've got Joe Piggott as well now.
So there's going to be a lot of high balls going in there. And put Chris Solly in the middle. Because then we might have that combative midfield player that we. Or more than one, should I say. Because I agree with you about Cashy. He does put his foot in. But maybe we will need more than that against Wimbledon.
Personally, wouldn't be taking Jake Forster-Kaski out myself.
No. But then you add the extra mid. So you've got the three at the back. Then you just add Chris Solly into the midfield.
All right. So what? Okay. Like a
3-2-4-1, call it what you will.
3-3-1.
Whatever.
So, Interesting. Jason Fay says, the only hope I have for Charlton getting to and winning the playoff finals that the year ends with an 8 and we could play a team starting with S is now like clutching at straws. Well, it would be 20 years since our last. So who would the team with S be? Scunthorpe, I guess.
South End. Would you imagine that, getting South End at Wembley?
Yeah, apparently. No, that would be interesting. Now, ill advised, we're outclassed all over the pitch. They were the better team from 1 to 11. I can't believe we sent Cag on loan and get the Palace player instead. Everyone raving about him with no reason. I mean, we'll come on to Kai at the end of the show with the player in focus stuff. But, I mean, I can't really argue with the fact that we were outclassed yesterday.
I'd bet class. We were outfought. We were outbattled. I'd bet class is a different, maybe a difficult one. But certainly we were outplayed. No question about it. And the thing with Cag, I sort of agree. But on the other end, if he goes away and scores every week for Crawley and comes back a more confident player in front of goal, because I want him there as well instead of any loanee, don't get me wrong, but if it improves him going away and coming back a better player, as long as that works, fine.
Louis Grinley says that Carl uses his subs too late in most games. He should have put a Jose on at 1-0 down and gone for 4-4-2. Michael says, do you think there is a team in the playoff race in League One that we could actually beat over two legs?
That's an interesting one.
Yeah,
it depends if you, who we'd come up against.
You wouldn't want to play Plymouth at the moment, would you?
No, well, I said this last week, I just don't want to play Blackburn. I think anyone else, right. I think we can actually do on the day. Bradford are now going to drop down, which I'm really glad about, but I think anyone else, I mean Shrewsbury, Rotherham, Scunthorpe, say Wigan, yeah, and Blackburn go up and go Shrewsbury, Rotherham, Scunthorpe.
You want
us
to avoid Shrewsbury like to play and Plymouth. So what I want Shrewsbury and Wimbledon, Plymouth to play each other. No, I don't. I want Shrewsbury.
They'll play each other and we'll just go to Wembley anyway.
So I want somebody that, somebody we can beat. I don't know. Let's have a look.
No, I think on our day, like you say, we've got.
Can Barry
make
the playoffs?
We've got the players. And everyone clicks. I think we've got people to be feared as well.
So maybe on a bigger pitch, who knows? But I don't know. I think it's a question you asked me not after yesterday's game.
Yeah,
you'd have asked me after the week before's game.
Yeah, when we've won,
it would have been anybody.
Right, Super Clive says people say it's done wonders to still be where we are with the injuries, but even with the players back now, we're struggling to push on. No plan B. He moaned about sideways and backwards passing, encouraging pressure yesterday, but we always do that. He said at least his job's safe this season. There's no one there to sack him. The people have suggested that sometimes we do pass sideways and backwards too much.
I don't have a problem with it normally because it's keeping possession. It's trying to draw them to you so you can then get in and around them. I don't really have a problem with that normally. But teams that do that high press and are good at it, like Shrewsbury were yesterday, then you've got to come up with a different alternative. And I think that we were supposed to do that yesterday and didn't.
Mm.
But I don't think you can do it with just one up top anyway. I don't see how it works.
Yeah, Thomas Bramley says, Cashy was sloppy in possession and Kaika was absolutely terrible. He needs to be benched for Gyro next week. Red and White CFC said, when we conceded the first, we looked like a team that had never played with each other and the penalty save should have pushed us on to wake up, but it didn't. Game management was poor again. How many times have we said that in the last few months? Thomas Arnold says he was very disappointing. We started off very well and then they got the penalty which Amos saved. I thought that would encourage us, but it did the opposite. Kaikai has been terrible when I've seen him, and Cashy is very sloppy on the ball. Also, we don't look like a team. Sarah said, watching chocolate is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And for once, I don't blame Robbo. There was no passion. I think their wages should be docked. They get paid enough. Did you notice, just coming away from Charlton, the Billericay manager, Glenn Tamplin, sacked himself yesterday?
Oh, did he?
After, his team are running the Bostic League. They're going to win that at a canter. But,
lovely name for a league.
Yeah, but he decided to sack himself because he went in and demanded the players, except he's also the owner of the club, demanded the players take a docked week's wages because they got knocked out of the trophy and they got knocked out of another competition or lost another game during the week and didn't happen, so he sacked himself.
Hold on, so he owns the club?
Yeah.
Sacked himself?
Yeah.
Did he, after an extensive search, rehire himself half an hour later.
Well, no, funny enough, he's put his assistant manager...
After interviewing 23
he's
managers.
He's put his assistant manager in charge and made himself the assistant manager, which is pretty much how it's always been anyway, because he's a still man.
Does he play in their team as well?
No, I'm sure he wishes
he just wondering if he pulled himself off at half-time.
And a physio.
Yeah. John Taylor says, we have to realise we're not good enough. Shrewsbury are head and shoulders above, are better than us, and their ability and desire showed. If we do make the playoffs, and I don't believe we will, we won't come close to winning them. Freddie saying it's great to hear you back on the show there, Tel, which is nice.
No, sorry, can't, Freddie.
Yeah, James said our play is always too slow, backwards and sideways. The only way we play, we need to drive forward more. We have the pace and the skill to hurt sides, but we don't use it. We need to catch. We need to break quickly more often, catch teams out. On the Football for a Fiver thing, Thomas Roper said he thinks Exeter in 2009 was the first Football for a Fiver, which we lost. He said 3-0. I think it was 3-1. A horrible feeling. He says, if my memory serves me correctly, and we were tripe that day. Could be wrong, though, about the first game, not about being tripe. Yeah, I think I'm fairly confident that was the first one, and we did lose quite heavily to Exeter City. James, we weren't outplayed like against Wigan. We gave it to them. They had a wonder goal and a header from a corner. They didn't play us off the park like Wigan did. Now, John Pitchers, when I said, talk about yesterday's game, he said, we need to find a proper captain. That would be a good start. Now, again, we've heard people have said this a few times about Chris Solly being too quiet. I mean, how important of a role do you think the captain can be on the pitch for a team, Mark?
I was going to say, you look at the difference when Jacko, was skippering the side. You'd hear him, at corners, you hear him attacking, organising the whole game. Vocal. We've said this about Solly before. He's just not that type of player. He'll join in with a ruck. He'll hand out a few slaps if he can, but he's not the kind of player, I don't think, who's going to influence it in such a way and G people up and get people really going. It's a difficult one, because if you're personally not like that, it's quite hard to bring that to a football game. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, people have played football to whatever level, whether you played in a park. There's always someone on a pitch who's always shouting and moaning and getting the ball. And there's always people who just get on with playing, and Solly's gets on with playing. So, I mean, I don't know whether he's captain because of longevity and because he's been here the longest, or whether Carl thinks he is actually the most suitable player to be skipper. It's a difficult one to call, because, we've seen when he's not been in the team, we've had various skippers and in different games. I think Jake skippered, Cashy skippered, mm-hmm. Paddy skippered. It seems to be like whoever's first in the dressing room gets the armband.
I think Pierce would be, if it wasn't for the fact that Solly's been here for so long, and he was always the understudy to Johnny Jackson anyway, I think Jason Pierce would be the captain now. Yeah. And I'd actually make...
I've got a feeling he said he put himself forward last year.
Yeah, I think he did. But, and he understood, I mean, he did the commentary for us on one of the under-18 games, I think. Under-23, I can't remember which, but anyway, now. But he said at the time, he'd love to be captain, but he understands Jacko and Chris Solly would be ahead of him because of their association with the club.
Like Freddie said, Shrewsbury were so well drilled and organised from the north upper, you're blessed with a good view in terms of shape. They moved as a unit and it felt like they had 20 men. They got around that much together. We looked clueless, lost in a set of boys against men. It was disappointing. Which is probably fair to say. Mm-hmm. James again said, Jose was wasted yesterday. He's a goal scorer. We needed a goal. So another one saying he should have come on earlier. Chris said, lots of times Amos long kicked it to Josh to head or flick on with no one remotely near him. So frustrating. I guess that ties in quite nicely with what you've been saying about if you're going to play long, then you've got.
If you're going to play that style, I think you can't just play one up front. I don't see how it can work. You need support up there. I mean, how many times have you seen? He didn't win that many headers because they were a good unit. But when he did, Aribo was sometimes close, but more often than not wasn't. You then want people running into the channels or at least running beyond them. And I think if he'd have brought a Jose on or started him, then that might have worked better.
Renan White, CFC, says, when the game is not going to favour, we need to have a plan B. Yesterday he subbed on a Jose, and instead of going up two up front, he played a Jose as a 10. Why didn't he go 4-4-2 we were chasing the game. Now on the debate about captains, Mike Tyson, London Inner Geezer says, I was captain of Thomas More FC for 6 years. I was always screaming and always shouting.
And he hasn't stopped.
No, he said, then he said, then he said we got relegated four times in, during that time. So it's just like screaming and shouting is not enough. Right.
Screaming was the only thing he was good at.
Let's have a very quick break here on Trunkline. I've still got plenty of emails to get through. Also, we're going to try and discuss why our record against the top 10 of League One is so bad. We're also going to talk about our favourite brawls that have happened with Charlton players. Our player in focus at the end of the show is going to be Sully Kaikai. He's started 3 times now on loan from Palace. We want to know what you've made of his performances. Right, quick break while I'll get the emails ready. Back in 30 seconds. The way you move.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
That pressure on Britain. Instead, they still have it. But they're giving it away as McGrandles loses out to Cashy. He'll go for goal here. Akme Cashy shoots it in!
What a Cashy! Oh, Akme Cashy.
What a strike from the Algerian. The way you move.
Welcome back, it's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Another new jingle made for us by Glove Pup there. His choice in music, not getting any better, is it, as he ages? Anyway, Paul. Onto the emails. Chris Davin, first one in, as per always. Thanks for your email, Chris. I just got home from that dross. That's why I love the fact that people email in, because it's a real good way to get it off your chest. And Chris is never one that he was. That's exactly, if I was allowed to put the word dross in, well, I'm sure I could have put the word dross in my match report, but I was very close to putting it in, is what I'm going to say.
And others,
yeah. It said, first 10 or 15 minutes were okay. Other than that, 75 minutes was complete garbage. Yet again, the fans let Eustace Robinson off the hook. We made Shrewsbury look like Barcelona, completely unacceptable. And what was that mercenary loney Kakai doing anywhere near the starting 11 after last week's shambolic display? I see Mark Bright was in attendance to watch their star at play. Maybe Robbo had a cosy chat and said it'll start to save a wasted journey. I'm sure that's not the case. Mark Bright was here at our last home game as well against Bradford, because I saw him outside. They said, anyway, that was garbage. No better than a guy losing on a Carroll Fry team. The sooner the season ends and we get rid of this mouthy no-mark, the better. Defend him again. I dare you. Right, he's dared you, Tell.
I never did. Why me? I told you we should have played two up front. Yeah. No question about it.
Yeah. Clearly upset with that performance. I don't think there's much defending that performance you can really
well,
do.
Well, there is that, yeah.
Right, this one's from Gareth. Says, dear Charlton Live, great show as always. Thanks, Gareth. He says, however, I'm starting to find myself slightly more aggrieved with Robinson and our fellow fans who think the sun shines out of his you-know-what. The man is all style and no substance. We've only won 5 of the last 18 games. That's 5 wins in 18 league games, people. 4 of those were against teams placed in the current relegation spots, with the other one against mid-table Walsall. However, people try and gloss over this. The results don't lie. I beg the studio to please acknowledge that 4 wins in our last 18 league games isn't very good before the defence of Robinson occurs. We need a very open and critical debate about Robinson's tenures at our clubs, the pros and the cons. So let's have that debate now. We've been asked to have it by Gareth. I think, you know, let's start with the cons, Mark. What have you put the cons down to, you know, so far last season and this under Carl Robinson?
It was difficult. We started the season, you know, not with a full squad, as we know. You know, again with players. When it got to November and the injuries started piling up, we went through that terrible run where we couldn't even buy a win, you know, and we couldn't get anything out of it. okay, the players are coming back now, and everyone thinks, oh, right, once all the players are back, it's everything's going to be rosy. You've got to look at it over since August. You know, you can't say, oh, I'm only going to cherry pick the last 10 games. I'm going to cherry pick the last 12 games for stats. I've said this about when we were conceding goals late. You look at it over since August when we started, and look at where we are. Look at how many, like you said last week, it took us to two games before the end of the season to get to the points we had now, and we've done it with 10 games to go. That's, you know, that's an improvement. I mean, not paraphrase one of our previous CEOs, you know, we've gone better on last season. So I don't get calling for him now. I think if by the end of the season we've dropped down to 11th and 12th, the new owners are in, I think you look at it again. I think getting rid of him now is churlish. You know, if you can't do anything, you can't get any players in. You know, you can say the manager come in with new ideas, but if they don't work, you're just going to be in a worse position. I think you for good or bad, like him or not like him, you stick with him. I think the easiest thing in football is to go two or three games, go, right, sack my manager, get someone else in, as if it's a magic wand. You know, and there isn't. I mean, you've got to think Bradford brought in
Grayson.
Yeah. And, you know, they've just lost two out of the last, they drew with us and then lost two. So, you know, and he's an experienced manager who really should have gone to Bradford and turned it round for them.
Mm.
And he hasn't. I mean, Chris Powell went to Southend, a middling team, and has turned it round, you know, a bit for them. They're in good form. However, you know, will they finish above us? I don't think Southend will finish above us, even with having a manager like that come in. There's no magic wand. There's no easy answer. You know, to borrow Nathan's well-worn phrase, he's Marmite. You know, some people like him, some people don't like him. I think we play better football under him than we have of our previous five or six managers.
Mm.
You know, but that was only in the last sort of like 2 years we've had those five or six managers. But we try and play an attacking football. He tries to attack. You don't see him looking out and saying, right, we're going to play with a bus at the back. Okay, sometimes we should. You know, you're thinking, hold on to a lead. But, you know, we want to see attacking, exciting football. You're thinking, you know, do you want to see the Fossus and the Marshalls of this team, or do you want to just not see those kind of attacking wingers? Mm. And, you know, for Carl says, I want to have an attacking player like Fossu, I want to have an attacking player like Marshall, and I'm thinking, I'm, you know, I'm with him. That's what I want to see, and that's what I want to see in football.
Mm. So a pro that I'd say is probably the general feeling around the club that Carl's tried to foster. If you think about how horrible it has been over the last 4 years in terms of probably getting fans on side, in terms of, you know, I think he did that quite well, turning around the, you know, even if you look at last season, he was moaning about the sort of characters within the club. You know, there was this incident at Shrewsbury away, ironically, last season where something had gone on in the dressing room beforehand, and, you know, players not playing for the show. And I do think we've changed that around. I mean, there's a difference between tactical nous and things not going quite rightly as we wanted yesterday, and being outplayed by a much better team. But in terms of the general feeling around the club, I mean, I don't think Russell Slade did anything to change that here. You know, he tried, but I think he probably took some things out on the wrong people, and people didn't want to. I mean, you have seen, I mean, we've got a lot of emails in complaining about fans who have warmed to Carl Robinson, and, you know, the fact is we haven't had a manager too warm to over the last few years since Chris Powell, so at least we've got that now. You know, obviously he winds people up with his ways and his boyish excitableness after games, particularly when we've lost. People don't particularly want to hear it, but at least it's someone that people are at times getting behind this season, which we haven't seen over the last few years, in my opinion.
No, I tend to agree with that, and I mean, I get where people are coming from up to a point, but I think what tends to be lost in all of this is the position we're in as a club, and it's not great, and it stems from well beyond the manager. Now, do you think in most other football clubs, when you get to a point where you're heading towards January and you've got a real chance to kick on, having had an abysmal injury record during November, we won one game between November and December, but we're still there or thereabouts through picking up some plucky draws, picking up some less than plucky draws. But then we hit January with I think three straight wins, and you think any normal club. Any club run normally, any club with aspirations, would then think, right, we've got the nucleus here of a decent squad, let's add to it, let's really push on from here. What do? We get in a few loanies and we sell our best player. That's where we are.
Mm.
You know, and much as I get people's frustrations with Carl Robinson at times, and yesterday's classic example, I wouldn't have played one up top because of the way we had to play. But in terms of where we've been and the managers we've had, a huge improvement on the last 4 years since Chris Bowles gone. You can't argue that it, you know, compared to anybody else we've had. All right, the first year under Jose Riga possibly, but that was a fire sale, wasn't it? We managed to drag ourselves out of it. But you know, I think I would only really judge somebody like Cole Robinson when he's got the full backing and full support and the ability to do what he actually wants to do, player wise. Tactics, yes, I agree, but you know, we managed to win. I mean, we've won more away games this season than previous season, than last season, so something's worked. Something's different, something's better. Is it perfect? No, of course not, absolutely not. But you know, let's judge people when everything's moving in the right direction.
Right. That was a good email there, Gareth, and it started a good debate in the studio, so thank you very much for that. Right, the next one's in from Phil. Hi guys, yet another awful Football for a Fiver performance, all but the 5 minutes at the start of the match. We were second best in every department. Robbie says Robinson supposedly scouted Shrewsbury on Tuesday. Really? Both Solly and Pierce looked slow and cumbersome. Our midfield didn't turn up and constantly gave the ball away. Our supposedly super quick wingers don't get past anyone, and don't get me started about Big Josh. For me, one of the worst strikers I've ever seen in a Charlton shirt in recent years. Slow, touch of a donkey, and seems to only win a header when he's got the jump on someone. Just too muscle bound. As for Robinson, nice guy, like his enthusiasm, but totally clueless when things are not going his way. I think his days are numbered when new owners take over. The stench of Roland du Châtelet hangs over this club like a curse. Until he goes, for me, that's my season done. Not going back till he's gone. Great show as always. That's from Phil. And then he just added, PS, credit to Shrewsbury. They played as a team, no superstars, and their managers with a plan. Hope they get promoted. Love their fans, sung their hearts out, flares and all. That's from Phil. Cheers for that. Feel good line there about the stench of Roland du Châtelet hanging over this club. Stinks around here, doesn't it? at times. Right, next email comes in from Connor. Says apart from the first 10 minutes we were poor, the Shrewsbury's team were physical and pressed well, meaning we lumped it forward to Josh, who had a challenge against the size of their defenders. At least 8 players were over 6 feet in the Shrewsbury team. I feel we need a team like that in order to compete at the top. They got the rough against us and pushed us around, seeing it all happen against us a lot this season. Being sat behind Carl, Boyer and Jacko was quite something. I asked Carl where our big strong squad was, and he replied, we are small. We need to become physical and strong against top 10 sides in order to get consistent results. Marcus says, evening chaps, I was fuming after yesterday's game. Such a huge game and a letdown once again, similar to the Portsmouth defeat. If we want to have any hope in gaining a playoff spot this season, we need to do 3 things. We need to play 3 at the back, i.e. Konza, Pierce and Bauer. We need to sign Diarra. Now I forgot he's here actually. No, sign Diarra and play him alongside Cashy and JFC or Aribo in a 5-man midfield. Now that would beef us up, wouldn't it? Alou Diarra is obviously training with us. He said put either Kai Kai or Fosu up top to help Big Josh out. We have a lot of skilled individuals but not enough experienced leaders on the pitch. Without signing Diarra or a change in formation for the upcoming games, including the strong sides we face at home, we can say Talar to promotion. Interesting Diarra. Now he would add some bite to us.
He would. I mean, I'd be interested to know the situation with Alou Diarra. Does he actually want to, you know, he's training with us with a view to actually playing, and if that's true, of course you'd sign him up. Is he here because he's just trying to keep fit, because you know he's seeing out his time now, he's at a point where he's at the end of his career and he's probably hanging up his boots, but he just wants to keep fit? I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to know what the actual situation with Alou Diarra is, because a fit Alou Diarra would walk into most sides, I think, especially at this level.
Maybe. I think he gave some quotes to the club website during the week. I think if we like the look of him, I think I'm certain we could get hold of him for the last few knock-ins of this season. Right, Freddie Wells says, hi guys, I came away from the Valley with a sense of incredible frustration yesterday. I think Carl and the team have done a fantastic job this year and was hoping they'd be able to show this off with a good performance in front of a big crowd. It seems like a big opportunity missed to increase crowds for the rest of the season. We started the game well and gave the crowd something to cheer with some early chances, but Charlton being Charlton, we weren't ruthless enough, word of the season, to get into an early lead and allowed Shrewsbury to settle. Once they settled, Shrewsbury used their immense physical presence to dominate us all over the field and to dictate the flow of the game. Don't understand why we tried a direct approach. It seems that Shrews had giants playing in every position, and playing the long ball was what they wanted. Every ball sent up towards the centre backs was dealt with easily. Conversely, the Shrewsbury number 9 did everything we want McGuinness to do. He held the ball up well and was a nightmare for our centre backs. They were bullied all afternoon and couldn't beat him in the air. Very disappointed with Pierce, who looked second best all game, and Konza never recovered after conceding the penalty. Similarly, Solly and De Silva couldn't handle the wingers and fullbacks, who gave them a torrid time all afternoon. The midfielders were shocking too. Forster Kaski disappeared from the first whistle. Aribo didn't make the most of his chance in the number 10 role, and Kashi in particular was dreadful. He couldn't pass to a red shirt and gave the ball away carelessly too often. His tackle to spark the brawl made me think of Reza's red card against Huddersfield. It seemed like he tried to get off early. Kai Kai and Marshall were kept out of the game by the opposition fullbacks in our direct style. We started the game playing the ball wide and putting balls into the box, which was causing the opposition problems. When we stopped doing that, Shrewsbury got into the game, and Marshall and Kai Kai spent most of the game running back to their own goal. The only player that came out of this with any credit is Ben Amos, who made a great penalty save, which should have set us on our way to a great result. We can't afford any more performances like this, or we can wave the playoffs goodbye. That's a very concise email there, Freddie. Thanks for that. It's plenty of good points in there, and it's probably fair to go through the entire squad and list out none of them stood out as good yesterday, unfortunately, because that was the way it was. Red and White CFC says, I want to see wins. That's the bottom line. We play some good stuff, but Robbo will be judged on results. Simple as that. And that's been poor overall. And London League Geezer says, you can't defend Robertson by saying he's better than the last few managers. Big deal, hardly difficult.
No. Don't get me wrong. I'd agree with that. I was trying to just put things in perspective, that's all.
Yeah, right. Right, a couple of tweets coming to my own account as well, actually. Dempsey said, a target man who can't win headers, a defence who apparently don't listen to Carl because they're not meant to pass side to side, plus a winger in Marshall who still hasn't found his strengths in the league versus possibly the best in the league. So let's say the same way it went wrong yesterday. And Ryan Tate says, it was gutless, it was spineless, it was pathetic. Solly just lets people go past him now. It needs to be dropped. The two centre halves were pretty poor, as was Joey De Silva. The whole midfield were a disgrace. Big Josh had no service, so you can't really fault him. He says manager has one more game, in his opinion. I mean, that's not going to happen, in my opinion, because Ronan's not going to sack him because of the whole situation.
It cost him money as well.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I mean by the whole situation. let's say this, under a normal circumstance, do you think Robbo's job would be in question now? We are still just outside the playoffs. We've still got a couple of games in hand.
I think probably over the Christmas period, yeah. It would. You know, I think people were looking then and thinking, you know, in a normal season, he'd have probably been gone. But it's not. We're not a normal club, unfortunately, at the moment.
But then again, we did. I mean, would normal owners have taken into consideration the amount of injuries we had at the time? Because we were fairly threadbare in that period, weren't we?
True. I think a lot of owners don't care.
Well, that's fairly true.
You know, you can throw a stick at anyone in the football league now, and you'll hit an owner who doesn't give them.
Good point.
Give her something.
Right, let's have a quick break. I think we're going to quickly do the brawls after this break, because we need to lighten up for a little while. So talk about our favourite fights.
I thought you were starting one.
Yeah, oh no, we can have a quick brawl in the studio during the interval if you want. Then we'll also talk about why our record against the top 10 has been so bad and try and work out why that is. Back in 30 seconds here on Charlton Live.
For the run of De Silva, he's looking to get beyond Kane, but Kane, well, he played the ball and De Silva's nipped in and taken it off him. Back into the ball!
Yes, oh, superbly finished by Josh McGuinness. Lovely work from De Silva to rob
Kane
on the right-hand side, the Charlton left outside the penalty area. He nipped into the penalty area along the touchline, ball back into the six-yard box and finished by McGuinness.
Welcome back to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Mendonca in Asda says, football for five, if you're having a laugh, should be asking for a refund after that shambles. The highlight of the day was the trip to the pub beforehand, which made it bearable. Unlike a certain food chain, it looks like the chickens may be coming home to roost for Mr. Robinson.
He did that.
Yeah, very clever. Now, yesterday, at the end of the game, towards the end of the game, there was a big old brawl. And now, slightly disappointed that there wasn't more punches thrown. We're not one of these shows, like, you know, on Sky Sports, when, oh, we don't want to see that. We want to see that. I love that sort of stuff. I love a good fight. I love it when that sort of stuff kicks off. Slightly disappointed, you know, we'd already lost the game. Throw a few punches. That's my view. everyone, you know, broadcasters always have to pretend they don't want to see it. Oh, it's ruining the game. Blah, blah. That sort of stuff is funny. Now, yesterday's got me thinking, I wonder what everyone's favourite brawl is. Now, obviously, Tell, you mentioned at the top of the show, the most famous one, of course, was when we had two players sent off for brawling with each other.
The scuffle between Flanagan and Owls.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of Chinese whispers about that particular and why it happened. There were some quite incredible stories coming out at the time. But I think, basically, it was a case of Derek Owls was there. Went away on his big move to Derby or West Ham, I can't remember now, and basically Flanagan stayed put and became the new darling of the Covenant, was scoring goals for fun, and was, I mean, he was a great player, Flash Flanagan, and then we got Derek Owls back, and then suddenly all the attention went from Flash to Derek, quite rightly so, killer Owls, and I don't think Mike Flanagan took too kindly to that. And I think that they didn't really speak much when he came back, and it just festered for a while until that happened. And I think Flash might have said something like, called him lazy, because he was never the most industrious of players outside the penalty area. Was killer, and it kicked off.
Mm. Now, obviously, I wanted to hear what other people's favourite brawls were. Have you guys got anyone off the top of your head that you?
There was one at Palace involving a French striker that I thought was always a good one. That's the man.
Yeah, that was fair enough. I mean, there's a couple. I put it on the forum earlier to see if anyone had any memories. Dave Mimmett said he's not a brawl, but Garth Crooks once cuffed Mark Stewart in a game at Selhurst against Luton. He remembers. Now Charlton Park Lane said there's the friendly with the Italian side in early 2000. It was a testimonial for someone, wasn't it? And I think Powley even got sent off in that.
Which
chasing around. I think it was a really violent.
Apparently, in the Anglo-Italian, the away leg, I know I wasn't at it, but that was tasty as well. Carlo got angry that day.
Well, cool. What about the Battle of the Bridge? When Carl Eban was knocked out and then chased the Chelsea player around if I ever see you down Lewisham High Street.
Carlo very rarely got angry. He was always a better player when he got angry, I always found. the Battle of the Bridge is probably up there as well.
In fact, Golf Addict points out, as a few people pointed out this one, he says Lieben versus Chelsea 1988, not a brawl as such, but it would have been if he hadn't been stopped by a couple of his own teammates. Now, a couple of people mentioned Lloyd Sam up at Hull. This was an evening game a few years ago. Ended up with Lloyd Sam getting sent off and one of their players as well. Sebo mentioned it as well. He said, I remember the brawl at Hull in 2007 in that evening game where Lloyd Sam was sent off with one of their players. I think it all started because of a tackle. Chris says, do any of you remember the Battle of the Bridge? Carl Lieben got knocked spark out when he came through. He tried to get retribution, and he said, we actually relegated Chelsea that day as well. So there you go. So if you have a favourite brawl, let us know, studio at charltonlive.co.uk, or tweet us at Charlton Live, try and lighten the mood a little bit. But we've done that now, and we're going to go back on to the miserable stuff.
Isn't it strange, lighten the mood by remembering punch-ups?
Well, like I said, I've never been one of those broadcasters to pretend that we don't like seeing fans run on the pitch and fights and stuff. I mean, when a game's not going your way, it needs something to lift the spirit. Sometimes the players getting involved in a big brawl is exactly what you want. Let's dampen the mood again. Our record against the top 10 this season. Now, so I'm talking about the teams that are currently in the top 10. So they may not have been in the top 10 when we played them.
Yep.
But the current top 10, our record is played 11, won 2, drawn 3 and lost 6. Now, obviously, if you think about the fact that if we do get in the playoffs, we're most likely going to be playing a team that's currently in the top 10.
Let's focus on the positive. Who were the two we beat?
So the two we won were the 2-0 away win at Rotherham and the 1-0 away win at Bradford.
So Rotherham are currently in the top 6, right?
Yeah.
So that's who we want to face in the semis. And then Bradford to make a late run with us, we meet them in the final. Happy days, we're in.
Well, there we go, saw it. I mean, obviously, our record against the top 10 is going to worry us, because that is likely that who we're going to play.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at it. I mean, I think the Blackburn game was pretty much, you know, they said, you know, they were lucky to get away with that. We had played really well and were virtually unlucky to lose that 1-2-0. Wigan, you know, to take a point at Wigan when Wigan were flying at home. You know, I think you'd look at that almost as a positive, not as a negative. Oh, we didn't beat Wigan at their place, but I think you'd take, you know, a positive out of that. Plymouth at the start of the season, I mean, no one expected Plymouth to be as high as they are now. I mean, they're on a terrific run. So, you know, it's again, you know, you could pick out virtually any 10 out of that league, and we've probably got a mixed record against them. So, you know, as to the top 10 at the moment, so, you know, I think you've got to look almost half glass, half full sometimes at some of these results and go, you know what, you know, which one of these games, the Scunthorpe game, the two goals they scored were worldies, absolute worldies. And like yesterday, you've got to put your hands up and say, you know what, we lost, we didn't actually deserve to win. Mm. The other team were better that day. You know, is it down to one thing in particular? No, it's not. You know, we've won when we've been bad, we've won when we've been good. So not that often this season, but it's, you know, I think you've just got to take everything as it comes. I mean, I know you're a great lover of stats and stuff, but I think sometimes it can make you, I mean, the Millwall say, oh, you know, you haven't beaten us for so many years. We weren't in the same division for, you know, 20 odd seasons with them. So, it, you know, stats can always be what you make them.
Well, if you look at our remaining, we've only got 5 home fixtures left, actually, and now 4 of them are against teams in that top 10 as well, which to add to that, I know you know, you play the game as it lies as such, but there are still better teams to come to the Valley. If you look at our last 4 home games against Plymouth, who, like I said, have jumped into that top 10 recently, and in fact they've jumped into the playoffs, they've still got Rotherham, Scunthorpe and Blackburn Rovers to come at home, so that is going to test us. So we need to think, how are we going to beat these teams? So I put it out on Twitter earlier saying, what does Carl Robinson need to do in order to improve our record against the top 10? London Innit Geezer says resign. Martin says send that garbage Kai Kai back to the filth for start, absolute garbage. I'd rather be rubbish with Charlton players in the team than with any Palace players in the team. Says we're also too predictable. We need to go 4-4-2 with McGuinness and a Jose at home. Andy Lepata also says that Carl needs to resign. Jason Faye said he needs to have a plan B. He's stubborn, he's tactically inept, and he's full of waffle as well. TFT says Robinson could resign and let someone else have a go. Maybe someone not so obsessed with 4-2-3-1 and didn't look to constantly blame others for their tactical ineptitude and shortcomings. Red and White CFC says 5 wins in 18 games. If the new owners do take over, I think that Robinson will be here next season. Now James has said at times Robbo's tactics or lack of them has cost us. They apparently do their homework on opposition, but how they will play, but doesn't change the way we play. We were rubbish yesterday, for me, so was he. We need to sort it out, as they need to play for him and action the plan. He says it's so frustrating watching Charlton at the moment. We have the quality, just not the desire on paper. We had the better side yesterday, but you never thought it. We were just average, but we shouldn't be. We have players to be in the top 2. James also adds, we don't play a team. Robbo says they didn't stick to the game plan. He's on the sideline and nothing changed. What did he say at half time? The second half was the same as the last 35 of the first half. They were first to everything yesterday. We can't get in amongst them. He needs to mix it up. We're too easy to read. Same every week. Subs didn't make a difference. Jose is a goal poacher and he played in midfield. Right, Steve Catley says we need to play 2 up front and find a midfielder who puts his foot in, goes forward. Parker, Kinsella, Cousins, etc. Stop the tippy-tappy with 4-2-3-1. Players aren't good enough for that and practice defending crosses into the box. He says, other than that, we're doing just fine. Fry Fury says he needs to learn to be more pragmatic when it comes to tactics. He can achieve this, as he did it against Wigan away. 5 wins in the last 18 games proves it's not working. Forget our early good start. That was 5 months ago. Get into the present. He's lucky to still be here, in my opinion. And Dan Sheed, when asked what we can do to improve our record against the top 10, is we need to go 3-5-2 with an uninjured De Silva and Marshall operating as wing-backs. Right, we're going to run out of time. We've still got to do the player in focus with Fosu. So we're going to have a quick break here on Charlton Live. When we come back, we're going to do that Fosu player in focus.
We showed until the last second a good desire, and they got rewarded for it. So they still, the whole team showed that they really want, really want, really want. Want, really, really want. Want, really, really want. Really, really, really want. If you want to
be my lover. So welcome back. It's Charlton Live. It's of course Kai Kai. We're doing this apparent focus. I wasn't focusing, ironically, there.
Hey.
And forgot. Now, just before we do that, London Innit Geezer, talking of Brule, said, I remember Hale sent off at Fulham for laying one of their players out in an FA Cup tie at the Cottage, causing a mass brawl. Can you remember that one?
I should have been there. Was that the one where Hale's actually scored the winner at Craven Cottage in the FA Cup? If it is, I remember the goal because I was right behind it, but I don't remember the brawl, if I'm honest. Mm.
That's always my favourite part of the game, the brawl. So I'm sort of disappointed you don't remember it. Right,
Bob reminded me it was Derby first he went to.
Excellent. Right, so yeah, yesterday was the third start that Sully Kaikai has made, and obviously he's one of our two. No, we knew the situation we were in January. We weren't able to sign players on permanent deals, but we were getting players in on loan, and we ended up getting Gyro and Kaikai, as well as Mavadidi, of course, is injured and gone back to Arsenal for his recovery until he's ready to come back. Now, Kaikai is the one who's made the most start. He started all three of our last three games now. What have you made of him so far, Tel and Mark?
You get the feeling there's a player there, because the first 5 minutes, as I said yesterday, everything that we did well almost went through him, but then disappeared. And I think that's been the problem. He seems to look like a half decent player and a good player, but then disappear for fair chunks of the game. And that would be my assessment so far. Is it worth having him? If you'd have asked me when we got him, even with Gyro, I said yes, because it's new bodies, it's extra players that we can use. And if he played for 90 minutes like he played for 5, then absolutely yes. But would I prefer to have Carlin back? Probably.
Mark?
I was excited when we got him on loan, because I think, remembering what he did last season on loan at Rosebery, and seeing the goals he scored for them, thought to myself, you know what, he'll be a good player for us. We talked about it, whether he's not really a bench player, because he's got to be interested from the beginning. But he's had three chances, and I don't think he's shown us what he could do. So I don't think he's worth starting with him. Carlin had to go out. Carlin had to start games. I don't think if he'd stayed here, he'd have probably got 5-10 minutes, if that. He wouldn't have been the starter. I think it's doing him good being where he is. We'll get the benefit from Mahern Grant next season. He started games. He scored 3 out of 5 for them. So, I think it was the right thing to let him go and get starts. Mm. I don't think he'd have been starting anyway. So, for Kaikai, I mean, I'd be interested to start Gyro, because he can play on the wing, apparently.
His fitness seems to be in question.
He's got some height on him, so...
Yeah, his fitness seems to be in question, so we'll see. Anyway, right, so I asked you guys what you made of our player in focus this week, which is Sule Kaikai. Valley Floyd Fred said he's shocking. If that's their starlet, talking about Palace, future superstar, then God bless that shower of so-and-so that is Crystal Palace. Super Clyde said he's not good enough. I'd rather give Carlin a go. At least he's one of ours. London Nick Geezer said he's absolutely abysmal after his performance at MK. How on earth he started yesterday, I'll never know. Elliot says he's arguably the best player at the club when he's got the ball at his feet, but he's got the movement of a 5-year-old. He was electric in the first 10 minutes on Saturday, but then got marked out of the game too easily. He's a big upgrade though on Boutaka from last season. Martin says he's absolute rubbish, get rid of him. David Letchworth said he's shocking, we don't need him, send him back and play our own youth players. Charlton Strife said he's bang average, looks like he can't be bothered. The quickest he moved yesterday was when Robbo subbed him off, sending him back to Palace. Red and White CFC said he's not very good. And finally, John Taylor said he looked good when he linked up with Fosu against Bradford, but since then he's not looked interested. On Saturday he was shocking. One more performance like that and we might as well send him back down the road to the Nigels. Right, that's taken us all the way to the end of this evening's show. It's flown by, really, considering we haven't had actually much audio today. It was a very short interview with Carl, and no highlights. So thanks. That's because you guys have got involved so much. So thanks very much to all of you for sending your stuff. Mark and Tel, thanks for coming in this evening.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Cheers. And we'll be back on Thursday. Anyone who's going to the quiz tomorrow night down at Bexleyheath, you'll see us all there. Come and say hello and slag off our views, which is what we're there for, really.
We won't have time for the quiz.
So we'll see you there. Thanks for listening. I've been Louis Mendes. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you on Thursday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.